10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Believe this? Finally, the end to the weekend. We get to go back to work on the third shift and have peace and quiet. Oh, my God. Dr. Dave's wet. Listen to this guy. Let's do this together, ladies and gentlemen. Nice and loud, the general nonsense that you deserve. Oh, you sound incredible tonight. You know, if you're really good on the radio, you hit the vocal. Are you ready? It's coming up. No one's with you in the car. No one's with you in the truck. You can shout. You can scream at the radio. I know you want to pretend you're a big-time disc jockey, and they all hit the vocal. Ready? You ready? Sit up straight. One, two, three. And go. Oh, you sound incredible. Madly. Now you know why I was only in the dramas in high school. I didn't get into any musical. Not one. I find that hard to believe, too. In the first 3-4 minutes of this show, we just have a crash after a crash. Because my very skilled sound engineer... No, leave it up. What are you doing? Leave it up. I want to hear it. My very skilled sound engineer, he is not allowed into the control room until nanoseconds before we go on the air. Why? Because there's a very serious political show on this station before we go on the air. My God, that has to take priority, ladies and gentlemen. Screaming at the Democrats, yelling about the things that matter to nobody. Good evening. I'm Walter M. Sterling. What are you supposed to do now on the rundown? Aren't you supposed to do something? What's it say? Oh, that wasn't even on the rundown. Hey, did we get our friend Dutch on the phone? Have you reached him? No? I'll tell you, it must be nice. I found this great barbershop in Chagrin Falls, Ohio. Well, that sounds terrifying right there. But every time I go visit my in-laws, I time it to get my hair cut at this terrific barbershop in Chagrin Falls, Ohio. And the reason I like the barbershop is because, hold it now, they don't shampoo hair. They don't color hair. And they don't have those stupid little chairs that are not meant for real guys. There are two kinds of chairs you're going to find in a barbershop, right? You're going to find the ones that are comfortable for women and then the ones that men are forced to sit in. You want to get your hair cut there. Guys have to sit in these. And it always feels, those little ones, those little thin ones with the thin arms, they always feel like they're about to collapse. When a guy sits in one of those, when I sit in one of those, it always feels as though it's about to collapse. Meanwhile, in the olden days, you know, a year or two ago, there were barbershops made for men. I'm going to say it. I am so brave that I'm going to deviate from this station's format of screaming at the Democrats for a good 3-4 seconds and say there used to be barbershops made for men. And they included these huge chairs, like Captain Pike was in, these huge chairs that could easily sit a 400-pound guy, no sweat. And that were surrounded by barbers, and many of the barbers were women. That's not the issue here. But everything was made for a man to be comfortable. Those barbershops are illegal in all of California, much of Maine, and southern Florida. But in other parts of the country, such as North Jersey, not South Jersey, North Jersey, and all of Ohio, Minnesota, parts of Illinois, there are actual barbershops. and they have conversations that I find to be true bellwethers of what you and I care about. Entirely different dynamic than what you and I get anyplace else, where there's an honest conversation. And here's the key. The reason there's an honest conversation in barbershops built and made for men is because when men just talk to other men, it has no tenure. There's no trail. Anything I say to the barbers in this barbershop in Northeast Ohio or say back to me, no memory. It has no memory. Everything they say is immediately erased, like an airplane voice recorder. It's erased after a certain period of time. The minute I get up and I leave there, I have no memory of the bad dad jokes, any racist comments they might have made, any vaguely inappropriate comments, anything that would have raised the ire of HR, gone. And that is part of the thrill of going to a real barbershop. The pornography in those barbershops is not the girly magazines. It's not the naked girly magazines. No. The pornography is that for a precious 23 minutes, a guy can be a guy and not worry about offending, It's a gift. I'm just going to think about what a gift that is for a few minutes. Well, coming up, you and I are going to talk to Dutch, who owns the barbershop. And what else I got for you tonight? I have a lot for you tonight. We have Vila Hool with a stripper's report, a Walmart report, plus a live story, a special live story that only took place at Walmart. And I just heard about it yesterday from a skilled storyteller. And I said, well, you have to come on the show and actually tell that story. And he agreed to do that. And we will talk to him in just seconds. And then I have a question for you, and I hope you can answer this. I experienced something this week. No, not that. I experienced something this week that I definitely did not expect. I went out to the car, the Chrysler Pacifica, and there was a coat of ice on the windshield. And it was a real coat of ice. It was not going to come off with the windshield wipers or the defrosters. It was a real coat of ice. And it wasn't going to come off with the scraper. I mean, this was immune to a real scraper, the kind you buy at a gas station with the extra long handle, not the kind you got as a gift for Christmas, the real scraper. And I put the real scraper on it and the real windshield wipers on it, and nothing touched the sheet of ice. And I saw in the back seat of my Chrysler Pacifica, 2017, 127,000 miles, there was a gallon of antifreeze. I had a gallon of unopened antifreeze, a brand name, not a great value antifreeze like you get, a brand named antifreeze. I'm like, well, it's 20 degrees. It's cold as heck. I'm going to open the antifreeze and pour it on the windshield to melt the ice. 1, 2, 3, it'll melt it faster than any of the wash, the blue wash that you waste $5.85 for, the blue wash that you put in the windshield washer tank that vaguely works. I open up the brand named antifreeze. I pour it over the ice on my windshield, and I figure 1, 2, 3, we're going to be off to school, we'll be fine. Boom, right? You tell me why this happened. I pour it over the ice, a beautiful glistening orange in the morning sunlight, over the ice. Antifreeze, pure, not diluted. Nothing happened. It did not melt the ice at all. And it says all over the bottle, it says de-ice, de-ice. 40 below, North Pole, Saskatchewan. Gone. No, it didn't melt the ice at all. Nothing. I'm like, how is it possible that fresh antifreeze, not diluted, did not melt the ice? You're a real man. Do you know why? 855. Oh, here's my number. 855-839-1210. 1-855-839-1210. I want to know why the antifreeze did not melt ice on my windshield. Oh, look at this. Look at you. Walter M. Sterling. This is Sterling every damn Sunday.
Now, join lesbians in space.
Queer woman, there really is nothing more cosmically disappointing than ending up with a straight man. It's like winning the lottery and then donating all the money to a men's rights organization.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Officer, arrest me, please. Details later, strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
Anna Becky Gaffney here. We went out to eat. Becky ordered 2 entrees and took 2 bites of just one of them.
I thought I was hungry. Apparently, I just wanted to look at my food.
Coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I explain how the wrong choice of holster may have you chasing your gun across a busy New York City street. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Motorcycle mayhem. Ha! The people of Walmart. Later, Sterling Every Damn Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a radio whiz who proved a little too big for the room in the radio biz. His head overflowed with brilliant ideas to make radio great, but his bosses were all idiots and all they could do is hate. This wizard set off on his own, on his epic quest to make his show the greatest, better than all the rest.
And now he's back on the radio with his merry crew.
With Velo, Detective Vic, Thea Landon and her smutty books, the Gaffneys, Dave Scott, Florida Stories and all the rest. Here on Sterling Every Damn Night. Here on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Good evening, Walter M. Sterling. Now it's time to put your coffee, your chocolate, your tea in the microwave. It's on the glass carousel. Let's watch it go around. Keep an eye on it because it's going to determine your future. Microwave meditations. This will determine your future. Ready? It's coming done. It's coming up. We've got about 30 seconds. It's done in 30 seconds. Every morning, what do you do with that microwave? Now we pop open the door. Where is the cup? If the cup is way in the back and you put your hand in like the black box in Dune and you don't know what's going to be in there and maybe it's the hot cup, maybe you put in the cool cup, you don't know. If it's way back there and you have to put in your hand and you could get burned, congratulations, that's how your day is going to go. But if the microwave brought the cup right to you and it's cool to the touch, even though the coffee or the tea or chocolate is hot, congratulations, you're going to have a great day. Microwave meditations. And now that I've told you this story, it will ruin your use of the microwave for the rest of your life. You will never forget what I just said. You will think, well, let's see. And then the cup is in the back, and it's not good. The other morning, when I was rushing out to take my beautiful 13-year-old daughter to school, the windshield of the car was covered in ice. And I couldn't cheat. I couldn't look around it. I couldn't windshield wiper it. I couldn't put on the heater. Nothing was taking that ice off. It's 20 degrees out, and I didn't have a scraper. The other car had stolen the scraper. You know how sometimes you have a scraper in your car and then you realize the other car in the driveway has your scraper and everybody denies it? The only conclusion must be that the car stole it. in the back of my car, in the back seat, was a gallon of antifreeze, brand name, expensive antifreeze, not the great value antifreeze like you use, the expensive antifreeze. And I'm like, this is great. I have antifreeze. I can pour it over the ice on the windshield of my car and get rid of the ice. This is fantastic. So resourceful, so creative. Notorious all my career for being creative, if not practical. I opened it up. I poured it over the ice. And what happened? It melted instantly. No, it didn't. It did. Nothing happened. It was as though I was pouring more ice on it. It did not thaw one drop of the ice. I'm like, how is this possible that brand name antifreeze did not antifreeze? It did not work. How is that possible? I don't have an answer, and I'm not going to Google it. Don't be stupid. I have to Google more important things like Alexandria Daddario. I have to constantly be searching Alexandria Daddario to see if there's any new, you know, angles, or she has said anything really interesting in an interview, or anything quotable in an interview, you know, things that Alexandria Daddario would be an expert on. What's the answer? Why did the antifreeze not melt the ice on my windshield? Here's my phone number, 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. I need this answer. I want to know. I have some amazing stories about my daughters. I have an amazing story about my sister-in-law, and a perspective on my sister-in-law that I had not had until now. And then we have to talk about the 340-pound mom who sat on her 10-year-old son, and the results were predictable. All of this and you at 855-839-1210. I have an email, waltermsterling@gmail.com. waltermsterling@gmail.com. Every email. But don't email me the answer about the antifreeze. This is a radio show. We need radio content.
This is Matthias Bohm-Bell. Coming up, my live report on Hollywood and the movies. Only here on Sterling on Sunday.
Boom, boom, Hollywood. Sterling every damn night.
My gosh, I can't believe we do this show some nights without you. How is it possible that this is the number one show in this time period in America, and some nights you're not on, Matthias Boom Boom? How is that possible?
Well, some nights, Walter, I have to watch the movies I talk about. Otherwise, I couldn't talk about them. So it must be the only excuse I can come up with. I love having a chin wag with you any chance I get.
Has there been any trails from the Oscars from last weekend? Has there been any gossip that has been missed? Anything we need to know? Anybody who was nude or drunk?
No nudeness or drunk. I think that Adrian Brody's getting a lot of flack for having an acceptance speech that was longer than the movie that he won the award for. And that's saying a lot, since that movie was clocked in at over 3 hours.
3 hours?
That's The Brutalist, my favorite movie of the year. Not. Went on and on and on, and most people thought that was a little self-serving. But anyway, he is
now,
an
listen,
actor, and
you,
actors do like to hear applause.
Did you go to any after parties? Were you invited to any after parties?
No, you know, they don't allow us mere mortals to go to those things. Those are only the fashionistas, the influencers. I don't think I've influenced anyone in my life. You know, when I talk about movies on this show, I want to arm people with stuff, and I want them to go see the movie and think for themselves and see if they agree with me or not. But no, little guys like us, no, we never get to go to the parties. But we do get to go to the show, and that's pretty great.
I went to the Vanity Fair party once. And it's because I was the plus one to a really powerful guy who happened to be working with me, and he kind of needed to do this. What was surprising to me about it, it was the first time, and although I'm sure you've been to them, it was the first time I was ever to a party that had timed release. Everybody's invitation had a different time on it. It wasn't all everybody shows up at 8. And then, you know, there was a group that went in at 7, another group that went in a half hour before the Oscars, another group that went in when the Oscars were over. I was in that group. The people who went in during it, who got to sit there during the Oscars and watched it. So it was people who should have been in the Oscars but didn't make that cut. That was that group. But they gave them a sit-down dinner, a magnificent sit-down. I didn't get the sit-down dinner. I got to be delusional and think that, there's a Jennifer Connelly. There's a Jennifer and Ben Affleck. And I'm at the same party with Jennifer and Ben. I'll go over and talk to them. And they were just standing there looking at the crowd, taking it all in. And so I walked over to Jennifer and Ben and started talking to them as though we were equals. And they really gave me one-word answers. They did not register immediately that we were equals. And finally, it hit me over the head. Oh, we're not actually at the same party. We're not at the same party. I walked away. There were one or two other vaguely pleasant people there. But then, and I'm so ashamed of myself, over there was a big deal Hollywood producer who I went to high school with, who I was friends with, who came over to my house in high school, and I could have easily gone over to Joel Silver, shook his hand, said, "Joel, Walter Sterling, great to see you," and he would have registered it, and we would have had a 3 or 4 minute conversation as opposed to a 3 or 4 word conversation as Jennifer and what's his name and I had. But I didn't. Mateus, I didn't. Why didn't I go over and say hello to him?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you felt burned after that. But I'm sure any person that's been to your home and has had that privilege would at least give you the time of day.
And that's it. The time of day. Hey, listen, what movie should we see this week, Mateus, in Hollywood Live?
Well, I'll tell you, a movie that's made $19 million is the top movie in the nation since Friday, and which sounds really impressive, and it's really great, except the movie cost $118 million. That's the movie Mickey 17 from Warner Brothers, and this is from director Boon Joon-ho. He made the movie Snowpiercer, and similar to it, this is kind of a gritty class distinction movie about the haves and the have-nots, and sort of a science fiction political parable fantasy in which Mickey, who is played by Robert Pattinson, most people know from the Twilight saga, and his fair-weather friend Timo, who's played by Steven Yeun, started to get some money from the mob to establish a macaroon shop. But when the notes do, they're threatened with death, and they sign on an expendable on a 4-year space flight to colonize a new world. What is an expendable, you may ask? Well, they take Pattinson's brain, put it into a computer brick, and then regenerate his body and use him as a crash test dummy. I know this sounds strange, and it is strange. The voyage is led by ousted former senator played by Mark Ruffalo and his wife played by Toni Collette. They're religious fanatics, supremacists, and they're caricatures of perhaps well-known political figures of today. So Pattinson's low-key figure presentation of Mickey is actually quite charming, but it's really clearly campy midnight farce material, and I don't think it's for everyone. So that's Mickey 17. It's making a lot of money, but I don't know if it'll make its money back after the first week and be relegated to midnight movie fare.
It's a terrible title.
Yes, it is.
It doesn't describe it. It does not communicate joy or fear, and people will get the number wrong.
That's right.
Right?
It indicates that there are 17 regenerations of this guy, and the 17th one likes to, you know, stand up against what's going on and try to make a difference. You've got, you know, there's a love interest for him, Naomi Ackie. She's wonderful. She was in Rise of Skywalker and Blink Twice. So there's a little bit of bedroom activity on this spaceship, so that's always fun.
Is she nude?
Of course, there are fun ideas. She gets nude, and there's also the idea that he's regenerated one ahead of time. A Mickey 18 shows up, and the girl has two identical Robert Pattinsons to decide which is which, and they have very different personalities. That was actually the high point of the movie.
Does it look like Robert really wanted to be in this movie, or did he need money?
No, I think he liked it. He played it so low-key and such a simpleton, I thought his performance was good. I don't know. I think he wanted to be in it. You know, many Hollywood actors like to upset the current political world with movies, and this was a thinly veiled attack. Can you believe that? On the current political situation and administration? I can't imagine Hollywood ever doing that, but there you have it. That's what goes on the screen in Mickey 17.
Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood, how do I find you on Facebook?
Mateus Bombals Hollywood. That's MATIASBOMBAL Hollywood, like the city. That's MATIASBOMBAL Hollywood, like the city. And I thank you, Walter.
I thank you, sir. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Detective, New York Police Department, NYPD. You still have your hat? I wear my hat. I love the NYPD, and now I love it even more. Melissa Mercado, she's in a wonderful video that was seen on World Hip Hop, showing the curvy cop gyrating and shaking her booty while wearing only a thong and a skimpy bra. I have really good news. She can pull it off. The cop's controversial twerking performance is in that Doin' That video by Hempstead rapper Esquire, whose real name is Fabian Winfield. Mercado makes $144K a year, grade 3 detective assigned to the Bronx Special Victims Unit. And let me tell you what, in the Bronx, you get some crime. You also appreciate seeing a wonderful lady with a shapely caboose. The rap guys like a lady with a big, round bottom. They like them bottomy, childbearing hips, cheeky. Pole dancing was a part of this wonderful video. The police union, though, is quickly out there defending Melissa Mercado, saying that, you know, it has nothing to do with her as an employee or as a NYC detective. Since Detective Mercado was not wearing NYPD paraphernalia, nothing in the video says she's a detective. She's performing for money. She has a side gig. A lot of cops have side gigs. Some are security. Some are at a club making sure everyone's getting along, sometimes to a hip-hop concert. Well, this lady is fighting crime while shaking her booty, and I like it. I like it a whole lot. Melissa Mercado, you are a police heroine. From the Champagne Room, woohoo! It's Strippers on the Loose. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every damn night.
Look at you. Every damn Sunday, it's you and me. Is this the best time of week? It's just us. Finally, the family, friends, social obligations are done. You get to veg and be alone. Philip, welcome to Sterling every damn Sunday, 855-839-1210. Hello, Philip.
Hello, sir. How are you tonight?
Well, I recognize your voice, and I always enjoy speaking with you.
I know, but, like, maybe my voice is like, what is it, like computer animation or whatever. Hello?
No.
It's like a...
No, it's like...
Hello?
It's like cough syrup.
Stop stepping on me, Walter.
It's like cough syrup.
What? It's horrible. Listen, I mean, oh, my God. I don't know why every time I get onto the phone... Like, I'm very chill. I wanted to say how much I love your program because, like, seriously, like, no one is on the radio like what you do, you know. No one is doing this in this era of the topsy-turvy, like, you know, Facebook, TikTok, and all this crap. Like, I seriously, like, the more I listen to your program, the more I like it. And it's like an addiction. Like, I don't know, like cigarettes maybe or something, but I don't know. I don't know why, like, I don't know why, like, I lapse into, like, this, this, like, talk. You want to hear my real voice? Hello, my name is Phil. Hello.
What else have you been addicted to?
Oh, dear Lord. Like, nothing really bad. Bro, listen, this is what I wanted to talk to you about. I said something about the other night about the spring break. You know where I'm at right now?
I have a different question on the table.
What?
Why does my antifreeze not melt the ice on the windshield of the car? I poured the antifreeze. Because, tell me why.
Yeah, okay. It's a conspiracy. Basically, RFK was involved in this way back in the day. Like, he tried to sell you antifreeze, and it wasn't antifreeze. Basically, it was like chicken giblets, right? This is RFK, like back in the day. Like, he tried to sell everybody on antifreeze, right? And it wasn't antifreeze, right? RFK, oh my God. I mean, you don't want to go down this rabbit hole about, like, the why the antifreeze doesn't work, okay? It's so simple. I have a simpler question. Literally, I'm in, like, West Palm Beach right now.
JB Bakery, Stephen and Selena, welcome to Sterling Every Damn Night.
Feel the dough, eat the dough, JB Bakery, Selena and Steve, Sterling Every Damn Night.
Now, you have a recipe at JB Bakery, Burlington, New Jersey, that's appropriate to St. Patrick's Day. And I've given you, once again, really good marketing advice about this recipe. Did you see my note?
Hey, Walter, I did not see your note. I'm sorry.
Okay, now listen, you have to rehearse this, you and Selena. Before you come on the air, do not answer my first question with, "Hey, Walter, good to talk to you." That wasn't my question. You need to step right into it. And we have to get rid of this 8-second moat between my question and your first answer. I don't know what that's about. Are you debating with each other who should go first? The answer is Selena. The title of this recipe is Irish Cinnamon Potato Candy. All right, those words cancel each other out. Irish Cinnamon Candy, wow, I want that. I want Irish Cinnamon Candy. The imagery of potatoes, we get that with Irish. We don't need to say potato, but you say cinnamon potato candy. You've taken something that sounds great and is, and made it sound like a punishment.
I never thought about it like that, but it is traditionally called an Irish potato. And I have to say that, I mean, I always begged my mom to make them growing up, and they never really came out that good. They were kind of too much cream cheese or mushy. And, I mean, we just like to roll them and make them look like potatoes just because it was part of the holiday. But this recipe is really good. I would recommend it.
I'm not going to send out that recipe because it doesn't work out really well. Do you have a different recipe for St. Patrick's Day either now or that you can call back with? Because I want you to have a home run recipe for St. Patrick's Day. Do you have something else?
I have Irish, Irish soda bread. I have Irish soda bread that I'm making a lot of all weekend long.
Of course.
But
hold that. Wait. It's my show. Hold that thought. I don't want you to be interrupted by an evil computer. Hold that thought. The two of you come up with something clever and charming, and then we will talk with you later in the next half hour. Does that sound like a good plan?
I'll send it right over to you.
I didn't say that. I said, hold on. We'll talk to you again in the next hour. And love you guys. Let's come up with a recipe that you really want. You really want to sell. All right, hold on. All right, Steve and Selena, JB Bakery, they make these great recipes that even I can follow. They don't pay for the time. They're just interesting because when you and I think of a baker, we think of people who are really old. They're not. I'm Walter M. Sterling at 855-839-1210. Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
All right, coming up in just seconds, you and I are going to talk about spring break, something you did not do. But first, Dr. Dave Weather.
Sterling.
It's just you and me. Driving home, long weekend, tortured by relatives and friends. 14 inches from the speaker, I'm 14 inches from the microphone. It's just us in the 18-wheeler, the 4-wheeler, just us. Maybe if you're lucky, somebody else is in their car, but they're asleep. I mean, that's the lucky part, that they're asleep. No more talking. There's no more need for talking, because as an introvert, as a loner, which is not a loser, it's a loner, you need time to not talk, to not have to explain things. Always having questions about your decision. Why did you put the picture there? Where are the towels? Where did you put your shoes? Where? We don't need those questions. We're completely happy alone. That is what puzzles the day people. The day people are always mystified by the fact that we're perfectly happy alone. Never do you and I get lonely. How many of your friends married the wrong person because they said, well, I don't like being alone. He was all right. She was all right. But I just don't really like being alone. I love to be alone. That was the biggest challenge I had in getting married. It was like I was perfectly happy alone. Therefore, I had to have an overwhelming reason to get married. Exactly the right person. It's hard to say if that was true. I mean, the part about the right person. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is spring break time. And the first challenge of spring break through my whole life is, when the hell is it? Private schools, parochial schools, public schools, colleges, high schools, public colleges, private colleges all seem to have a different spring break. When is spring break? And in places that are resort communities based on sunshine, like South Florida, when is the season? They always talk about the season. We're here during the season. When the hell is that? Where is that on my calendar? St. Patrick's Day, Easter, New Year's. I don't see where it says the season. But the biggest mystery to me all the time when I was in school was, when is spring break? The cool kids all seemed to know when spring break was, and they already had plans. 2 or 3 days before the spring vacation, which if you were lucky was 2 weeks, usually one, 2 or 3 days before the spring vacation, people would be saying, oh, well, where are you going for spring break? And I'm like, oh, is it time? Is it time for spring break? Oh, I guess it is. That was my perception and awareness of spring break. I didn't really know when it was. 2 or 3 days before, I'd realize, oh, I what do you mean, what am I going to do? I'm going to sit at home. I'm going to eat more, and I'm going to watch more TV. Those were always my spring break plans. And then if one of my good friends actually had spring break plans, that always screwed me up, because I didn't want them to have plans. I wanted them also to be hanging out at home and watching a lot of TV. Those were my big plans. If I had said to my parents when I was in high school, and maybe even in college, if I had said, you know, I want to go to Florida for spring break. I want to go to Punta Cana. I want to go to Punta Cana. Any place that started with the word Punta. I want to go someplace that starts with the word Punta. My mother would look at me like, really? How are you going to get there? And I'd say, well, I'll get a plane. Will you? Can I get a spring vacation? Could maybe you guys will like pay for my plane ticket? No. You want to earn the money? Maybe, but I don't think it's a good idea for you, my mother would say. And I would say, why don't you think it's a good idea for me? What are you going to do there? She would say. What are you going to do there? What will you do with yourself at spring break? Because she knew I didn't drink, and she knew I had no interest in drinking. And she suspected, although did not know, that I wasn't going to be committing casual sex. To me, even as a young man, sex to me was a very big deal, because I had locked into my head this code. See if you can impress this on your sons. My code was, I will only have sex with a woman who, if I got her pregnant, I would want to raise a child with her. That was my thinking. I'm only going to have sex with a woman that if she got pregnant, I'd be willing to raise a child with her, which is a forever deal. That was my thinking. Well, that's a very heavy burden. But that's how I lived. Yes, until I got married, that's how I lived. I never had what would be commonly referred to as casual sex. And that had nothing to do with a high moral ground or some religious nonsense. No, no, that was just fear. I was terrified of having sex with the wrong girl, and she announces she's pregnant. And, well, what are your plans? I'm going to have the baby. And I'd be like, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. That came close once. I was in Northern California on a beautiful starlit night, and she was a California girl, and she wanted to do it. Interestingly, though, it was our very first date, and being from New Jersey, no woman I ever met in New Jersey wanted to do it on the first date. Any woman I met in New Jersey wanted to see the gold card. And then they wanted to see, is this your car or is yours being repaired? And I'd be like, no, that's my car. And it'd be like 8 years old and have 180,000 miles on it. And half the fender was falling off. And the trunk would shake. And I was just thrilled to have a car. But, you know, Muffy there, she is your car being fixed there, Walter? Because we're not going anywhere in this car. And, you know, so being from New Jersey, my idea of foreplay was 3 months of begging. So I'm in California, Northern California, where the ethics are completely different. A whole different set of rules and regulations. The woman likes you. Let's have sex. Never occurred to me. I mean, growing up in New Jersey, this never was an option. But she wanted to do it. And I'm like, you're an idiot if you don't do it with her. But I didn't. And you know what? The angels took care of me. Because the next time I went to California, I'm sitting there having a cup of coffee with her. And she goes, do I look different? I'm like, your hair looks good. And she goes, I'm pregnant. And I'm thinking real fast, okay, yeah, I didn't do it. And she said, well, this guy George did it, and I'm going to have the baby, and he's agreed to give me $50,000 a year as long as until the kid's 18. And I'm thinking, Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sterling every night, the cop on his line. Talking jack, bullets over trailer parks under the moonlit sky. Detective Vic Ferrari always gets this guy.
Hey, Walter. On this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to talk about police officers' holsters. So when I got hired in 1987, the NYPD duty belt had a holster that stuck on your side. And the damn thing was uncomfortable as hell, and whenever you would sit in a radio car, it would jab you right in the hip. So what most rookie cops do is they run out to a police equipment store and they buy what's called a swivel holster. And a swivel holster, when you sit in a police car, you can fold it and it'll sit up in your lap. And when you're walking, you kind of look like a gunslinger because back then it would swing from side to side. The problem with that swivel holster is it's got one bolt holding it in place. And it's happened a couple of times where a cop was in foot pursuit and their gun came off and went flying ahead of them towards the guy they were chasing. One time I was working with a cop, he got into the front seat of the car, and the next thing I know, he's holding his holster in his hand. I go, what the hell happened? He goes, the bolt came out. But there are more choices with off-duty holsters, and there's a variety of them. If you want to go the old school detective squad Barney Miller look, you can get the shoulder holster that goes crisscrosses across your back. It always looked too complicated to me. I preferred a holster that would fit inside your pants and was comfortable. Some guys like what's called a belly band. You lift up your shirt, it's a band that straps around your waist. It's like a girdle, and you stick the gun inside. But getting back to the shoulder holster, I had a friend of mine who one morning was going to the bank to get a savings bond for his niece's birthday party. He threw on his shoulder holster, threw a jacket over it, and drove over to the bank. Gets out of his car, he starts running across the street to the bank. The gun comes out from the shoulder holster and flies across the street like a hockey puck. Hits the curb, he runs over, picks up the gun, sticks it back in his holster, and he notices two guys sitting in a van across the street watching him. He goes into the commercial bank. The bank manager is getting him the savings bond. He sees the guy in the van get out and get on a payphone. Next thing he knows, he sees a police car drive by. So what does he do? Instead of waiting around for the cops, he runs out the back door. I says, why didn't you wait till the cops got there? He goes, Vic, it was a gun run. They probably would have ordered me to the ground, and I would have had to have ID'd myself. It would have been a big thing. I says, well, you're lucky. He goes, yeah, I sure am. He goes, I sent my wife later to get the savings bonds. So for more behind-the-scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD, Presumption and Dysfunction.
Sterling on Sunday. Coming up.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here. We went out to eat. Becky ordered two entrees and took two bites of just one of them.
I thought I was hungry. Apparently, I just wanted to look at my food.
Coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Motorcycle mayhem. Ha! The people of Walmart. Later, Sterling. Every damn night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Here's the story of a radio executive who met with enormous success. His head overflowed with brilliant ideas, and he really knew how to dress. But his bosses were all idiots, and all his brilliance was for naught. So he had to set
feel the dough, eat the dough, J.B. Bakery.
Oh, my gosh.
Selena and Steve.
There's Sterling Every Damn J.B. Night. Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey, with a great St. Patrick's Day treat. What are we going to bake, Stephen?
Soda bread.
Fantastic. What's in soda bread?
Soda bread is delicious. I enjoy it. It has... I like to use buttermilk in mine at J.B. Bakery, and it has usually raisins to keep it simple, or you can use dried currants, any kind of dried fruit, which is perfect. It's a cakey but bready kind of dough bread, and it's really enjoyed with a wonderful preserve like a raspberry or a strawberry, and definitely, definitely melted butter, toasted if you can. It's fun to bake in the oven or on the stovetop with a iron skillet. So that's always a good choice. You can even bake it in a loaf cake pan. And what I enjoy doing at the shop, because I have a lot of people that want to enjoy soda bread, and I sell them in big loaves for like $8. But I'd like to have these individual ones, almost like the size of a scone, a little bit bigger than a muffin. And that's nice to have individual, and anybody can just take it home or have a bite out of it right away or save it for later. So it can be enjoyed individual or buy a whole big loaf and have it for, you know, a nice little Irish spread for your holiday meal for this time of year.
This is Stephen from J.B. Bakery giving us Irish soda bread recipe. How long does it take to make the Irish soda bread? Because we're busy.
We are very busy, and that's what's great about it, is it doesn't really take that long. Put all the ingredients together, knead the dough, take about an hour from start to finish, let it cool down 15 minutes, and you can enjoy it pretty much right away. It only doesn't take long to cool down. But that's one of the fun things about this is you can always take it out of the oven and cut it and enjoy it right away because it's hot. You can put that butter on and throw some raspberry jam on it, and it's excellent that way. And, you know, it's like one of those things you can pretty much enjoy all year round, a simple weekend treat to bake, you know, put it out on a Sunday dinner. That's what's wonderful about it. I just saw a lot of those at J.B. Baker this time of year, and my customers really look forward to it.
Stop.
Wonderful.
Stop selling. Stop selling. Answer my questions about the soda bread. I'm sure your customers enjoy it. That's what you do. We assume that. Do I have all the ingredients?
Well, what's neat about this is that you can use buttermilk, and buttermilk is, I know that that's a difficult one for some people, but sour cream, a lot of people have sour cream in their refrigerator because they're using it for other things, like maybe they're doing like a sour cream with their nachos or something fun like that. But sour cream will give it a little bit more moisture, so you might have to bake it a couple minutes longer. But I really enjoy sour cream. Baking with sour cream, that would be perfect to do that. And raisins are good enough. You don't even have to put anything in it if you don't want to. Some of them are baked with caraway seeds, which gives it like a little bit of like a, I don't know, like a kind of breaks up the sweetness. But a lot of people don't really go for caraway seeds, so that's an option. Raisins, I like the dried fruit, so I think you get a nice from like the local health food store usually has a good mixture of dried
there.
Fruit.
Stop there. I don't want to hear about any health food stores. When I talk to you, I never want to hear about health food stores. I want to hear about decadence, sour cream, butter, Irish soda bread recipe. Send me an email, WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. I will send you the JB Bakery Irish soda bread recipe. I'm Walter M. Sterling. Look at this. My God, it's Sunday night. We get to enjoy each other at this time of week. And no one has to bother us. We don't need people bothering us. But I haven't gotten an answer yet to my key question, which is why is it that I had a sheet of ice on the windshield of my car? Solid sheet of ice. Nothing would take that off. I've got a bottle of antifreeze. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is great. I'll pour the antifreeze over the ice on the windshield. It's 20 degrees out. The scraper doesn't work. The windshield wipers will be destroyed. I pour it over the ice. The ice doesn't melt. How is it possible that brand name antifreeze will not melt ice? Isn't that what it's supposed to do? Isn't it supposed to be like Mr. De-Icer? No, I'm not kidding. I don't know why. My phone number is 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. And if you want that recipe for JB Bakery, it's WalterMSterling@gmail.com, WalterMSterling@gmail.com, every damn Sunday.
Stealing every damn night.
Oh, my gosh, look at you. It's Sunday night throughout North America, coast-to-coast live radio show, Tara. One of my very favorite names, Tara. Welcome to Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
Good evening, Mr. Sterling.
Good evening, Ms. Tara.
How are you?
It's an honor to speak to you. Do you have an answer for my question about the antifreeze?
I'm trying to figure out what happened with that. Do you think maybe you got confused with antifreeze with de-icer?
I did not have any more de-icer. I know the difference. This came out of a fresh bottle that I opened, and it was called antifreeze. And it was from a brand name. It wasn't like the Great Value or the Costco brand. It was a big brand name. And I bought it for my radiator in case I needed it on a long trip. And it didn't melt anything, Tara.
I'm not too. Is antifreeze supposed to melt ice?
Isn't it?
I don't believe it is. I just don't think that's what it's for. I think the name can be totally deceiving.
Like so many things, Tara. Do you have other things you wish to discuss with me? Do you have other things to discuss?
I don't. I can't think of anything. I do want to hear how your daughter's doing.
I will give you a report on that in exactly 7 minutes. Can you wait?
I sure can.
You're very kind. You're very sweet. Love your voice. Thank you for calling, Tara, at 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210. Chris Kroc, a very powerful broadcaster, one of the best in America, had lunch with me. I paid. And he started to tell me a Walmart story. And as you know, Sterling every damn Sunday celebrates Walmarts. And I said, well, wait a minute. Rather than you telling me this story over lunch, I want you to tell us this story live, which will lead into, because this is a well-produced show, will lead into Velo Hool's report on Walmart. So, Chris, you have a report on the Walmart.
Yes, this is, I was at Walmart with my wife. It's hell to me, but I go. And I was at a Walmart with my wife, and this is not the ghetto one, which we sometimes go to, the smaller one. This is the football field size one. And we're there, and I go to get deodorant. I need deodorant. I'm in the deodorant aisle. There's like 1,000 deodorants to get. And I hone in on where I'm at, and I'm looking at it. And all of a sudden, some guy comes up next to me, and he is way too close, like some of these Europeans or something that don't understand personal space. And he's way close, and he reaches almost in front of my face. And he takes a deodorant off the aisle. I'm like, what's your problem? I didn't say anything to the guy, but I'm just thinking, what's your problem, dude? Why are you reaching in front of me like this? Why don't you say, excuse me? And he takes it off, and then he opens the cap, and he sniffs it, which might be normal. We might be seeing, you know, do I like this smell? Do I not like this smell? He smells it, and then he lifts up his shirt, standing right next to me, way too close. And he puts the deodorant under his arm. And he puts it under both arms. And then he puts the cap back on, and I think he's going to turn right and leave with the deodorant. He does not. He puts the deodorant right back on the shelf in front of my face with no shame. He turns to the right, and he leaves. He doesn't flee of embarrassment. He walks casually as if he sniffed it and said, I don't want to buy it. Not as if he put it on his underarm. It was the most disgusting thing in my life. And then to think of whoever that poor sap is that bought that deodorant, will it be one of his underarm hairs? God help me. So then I thought the nightmare was over. I thought it was over. I'm like, this is what I got to tell you. This is when you see how we are screwed for future humanity. If this guy is who all these people are, they're going to grow up. Thank God you and I have kids. And I listen to your listeners. About 20 minutes later, I told my wife, as soon as I found her and rejoined her, you know, you always can't find her. You have to call her half the time. What aisle are you in? Where are you? It's a miserable football field. So then I go find her. I said, you're not going to believe this. I told the story. And then about 20 minutes later, I don't know, you're in Walmart hell. You don't know how long it is. You take hours and you hate it. And so I'm in line, and I look to my left, and there's that freaking guy that put the deodorant on. And to my freaking horror, he has a baby sitting in the front passenger or whatever, the cart, with a baby mama. And the first thought that came to my mind when I saw that was, God help that child. He is screwed. His father is the one that did that. And this kid has, I don't want to ever say this about any child, because you know it's not true. We don't ever say that about our children. But this kid, in my opinion, at that moment I felt, has no chance. No chance. Because his freaking dad did what I just described in front of my face with no shame. What's he going to do next? What's this kid going to do when he's that age?
This kid will have...
And my only hope is... Yeah.
This kid will have... There's no hope for the kid.
No. Unless, of course, you got to hope, obviously, that his mom leaves this guy. I mean, can you imagine the story behind this guy? What could possibly bring somebody to do that with no shame? Like, what in God's name is wrong with this guy? So, I feel there's no hope for the guy. There's always hope, but I feel there's no hope. But the kid, I only hope that the kid will be, you know, come bump into somebody like you or me or one of your listeners that will, you know, mentor the kid or be a teacher or somebody that can make a difference in his life.
Are you kidding me? There's absolutely no hope if that kid is with one of my listeners.
Well, that's right.
With no hope if it's with one of my listeners. Chris Kroc on Sterling every damn Sunday.
Your heart.
Walmart.
Sterling Shop. Walmart. Sterling Shop.
Spring Avenue Southwest, the home of a very popular Walmart in beautiful Decatur, Alabama. Yeah, Northern Alabama, right on I-65 there. It's a beautiful place filled with lots of shoplifting, and numerous people have been picked up in the last several days, according to the Decatur Daily, which is a fine newspaper. My favorite criminal has to do with a feller that was buying a variety of items, and he's a motorcycle guy. How do I know that? Because he shoved under his jacket the Everstart Premium AGM Power Sport Battery, which is a battery for your motorcycles. This feller wanted to get on two wheels. If you shove a motorcycle battery, even for a motorcycle, under your jacket, unless you are really rotund, or shall I say robust, people are going to notice that you have a big thing sticking out of your jacket. And the people at Walmart, they're not fooled, and we're not fooled this time in Decatur, Alabama. A lot of times you think of Alabama as being filled with simpletons, but that couldn't be further from the truth. There are as many simpletons in Alabama as there are in California, even by percentage. Okay, this feller gets picked up. He did pay for his groceries. Woo! But that $60 battery is going to put him in the hoosegow. And Alabama just passed new retail theft legislation, so he's going to see some time in court. We're back in the day, if you stole under a certain amount, they just pushed you out and you went from there. Alabama, they're not taking this crime lightly. It's not California. It's not New York. They're going to take you down. So again, if you are going to commit shoplifting at a Walmart, you need to do it more than yourself. You need to have a team going on there. I can tell you there's nothing better than being on the road, feeling the breeze in your face. Unfortunately, you have to be real careful because some moron's going to hit you. It is what it is. For the people of Walmart, this is Velo Hool. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday. Coming up.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here. We went out to eat. Becky ordered two entrees and took two bites of just one of them.
I thought I was hungry. Apparently, I just wanted to look at my food.
Coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Tight as a drum, I'll tell you. Dave in California, welcome to 855-839-1210. I'm Walter M. Sterling every damn Sunday, Dave.
Hey, I'm so glad to talk to you, Walter. I got the answer for you about the windshield that wouldn't de-thaw.
Yeah. All right, let me explain. I went out to my car. It was covered with a sheet of ice over the windshield. Windshield wipers wouldn't work. The stuff in the reservoir wouldn't work. And I didn't have a scraper that would have worked. And I went, oh, wait a minute. I have antifreeze. I'll pour the antifreeze over the ice on the windshield, and boom, it'll work. And nothing happened. So, no. Dave, what was the problem?
Well, the problem is, you know what antifreeze is made of? It's made of alcohol and glycerin and some coloring in there. And to use alcohol and glycerin in your radiator to keep your water and coolant in your car from freezing, it mixes with the water. So you have a percentage of water and alcohol and glycerin, and it won't freeze. But if you take that alcohol and glycerin called antifreeze, even the good brand, you pour it on your windshield, immediately it's out in the open. I mean, it's not your radiator is sealed up and it's under 15 pounds of pressure even when it's super hot in there, and none of it can evaporate. Alcohol evaporates really fast, when it's out in the open air. But you mix it with glycerin and your water in your radiator, it can't get out. It can't evaporate. So it keeps your water from freezing. But you take an antifreeze bottle and open it up and pour it on your ice, on your windshield. The only thing you're doing is putting some pretty yellow color or green or whatever color your antifreeze is, whatever brand it is. And immediately the alcohol evaporates. And the glycerin forms a little kind of slime on your windshield, and you got pretty yellow ice, and it will not melt the ice because the alcohol is gone. It evaporates out into the air immediately. So you're going to have to wait for it to warm up during the day and then wash your windshield real good and use the antifreeze in a sealed system. Put your cap on tight, make sure your cap works good, and the water in your radiator won't freeze, but the water on the windshield sure will, and it won't even melt it.
Dave from California, you are a good friend to Sterling every damn Sunday.
I have a sad story to tell you. Might give you a bit of a fright, but now when you put on your radio, it's Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. Put on the radio and turn out the light. When Sterling worked for the network, his Brooks Brothers suit really fit. But his bosses decided to fire him when they got tired of all his Sterling. Every damn night, put on the radio and turn out the light. Then Sterling became a consultant. He'd make your radio station a hit. But now that he's no longer engaged, those stations all sound like Sterling. Every damn night, put on the radio and turn out the light. Now Sterling's back on the radio. The kids say his show's really lit. And if any program directors don't like it, it's just because they're all full of Sterling. Every damn night, put on the radio and turn out the light.
You see the little too smile.
I've got an email. It's WalterMSterling@gmail.com, WalterMSterling@gmail.com. And you, Susanna Hoff, that singer, 65 years old. 65 years old. Let's you and I talk in just seconds. Sterling.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, what matters most, the weather tomorrow with Dr. Dave.
Chilling every damn night.
Dave mentioned that the time zone change did not happen in Hawaii. And I consulted a radio station in Hawaii for many years, KHVH, and I learned that Hawaii has its own time zone, and it's beautiful. It's Hawaiian Standard Time, Hawaiian Standard Time. And I used to say to them, why don't you, on your legal ID, why don't you always say it's 1 o'clock Hawaiian Standard Time? Because you own it. You're the only ones who have it, and you should own it. And like so many of my brilliant ideas in radio, never got on the air.
Tell him every night you're lost in space. Mission Control, Dave Scott.
The legendary Dave Scott. Can you believe Dave Scott, a known Canadian, which has a new prime minister, a new prime minister of Canada? What's the guy's name?
Mark Carney, an unelected prime minister.
How does that work, unelected? Is it like Kamala Harris was unelected like that?
Kind of. I mean, in the parliamentary system, what happens is when a leader steps down, they elect a new leader, and that leader automatically takes the position. In this case, Justin Trudeau, who we like to call dear leader around here, he stepped down from the leadership and the prime minister's position. So they held a leadership race for the Liberal Party. Mark Carney won the vote over Chrystia Freeland, and he becomes prime minister without ever being elected.
And how long does he get to be prime minister?
Well, there is an election scheduled for October. However, because it's in a minority government, and when government is recalled, which should happen near the end of this month, it is likely that there is going to be a non-confidence vote in the government, because we have what we call a minority government right now. That's where the leading party, the Liberal Party, does not have enough votes for a majority. So usually they are boosted up by another party, because we have five different parties in our House of Commons. So imagine the Senate having five different parties in it. That's what we have up here. And the Conservative Party, which is the official opposition, they don't have enough seats if the other parties add together. But we are hoping for an early spring or a late spring election here. Most Canadians want to go to the polls, but we're going to see what happens now.
Dave Scott, a real Canadian broadcaster, a cut-through talent. That's how some of the Midnight Misfits have described you, Dave. They describe you that Dave Scott's really good. He cuts right through.
Oh, really?
Yes, no.
Oh, my
really.
God, thank you.
No.
Thank you.
No, I get, here, usually the compliments that I get about the show go like this. Your show sucks. This is bad, this is bad, this is bad, except Dave Scott.
Well, you know what? I would disagree with that, because I think you put on an amazing show. The ratings obviously show that. But to be a part of it, a small part of it, for about 8-9 minutes every night, I love doing this. And you know what? I will tell you something. This is how much this show means to me. My son and I were having a late game of floor hockey tonight, and we are actually at intermission right now between the second and third period that we play, so I can do this show.
Thank you very much for taking away time from your kid, but I know you're a really good dad, and if I asked him, he'd probably say, no, I got plenty enough time with my father. It's all right. So,
well, he's leading the game right now, 2-1. So
yeah,
you know,
that'll mm-hmm. happen again. Now, Dave Scott, please give us any information about UFOs. Or I'm very concerned, and not kidding about this. I'm very concerned about. By the way, why does this mic sound like I'm off mic? I'm very concerned about the fact that there were three things we were promised. We were promised Epstein files, JFK files, and UFO files. So far, we're still waiting.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty amazing, Walter. I mean, the fact that Pam Bondi comes out and says, hey, guys, due to national security concerns, it looks like the Epstein files are going to be heavily redacted. Top secret national security concerns? What the hell are you talking about? This is a list from a pervert island, from a pervert himself, who is literally, you know, I mean, there's talk of human trafficking, murder, rape, every ugly word in our society was happening there. And you're going to hold it back due to some useless excuse of national security? What, were there other presidents there causing some of this, or former presidents? Were there senators? Were there governors or Congress people? I mean, the American public has a right to know about this. This should be like a court case where everything is on the table and everything is open to the public. JFK, I think, is coming. I really do believe JFK is coming. I think it'll be heavily redacted as well. But I think what we're going to find out is that there's two shooters. And I don't know when the UFO story's coming. Nobody seems to know. There is a lot of online pressure on the group to open up the files to this. But I don't know if that's going to be enough because, you know, we're getting into some serious national security issues because, look, it's not about the UFOs and aliens, people. It's about hiding what the American government has, what the American military has, what the contractors have. Because I strongly believe, like we saw with the drones going through, I strongly believe a lot of that technology is not alien. It is ours. We tend to think if we don't recognize something in the sky that it's automatically a UFO. However, you know, you have to take into the fact that there are people out there working on technology which we believe could be anywhere from 50 to 100 years ahead of where we are currently. And I've used this example before on your show, Walt. I'm going to do it again. Look at airlines. The same body style, the same type of engines have been used for nearly 70 years. It still takes about 6 hours for me to fly from Vancouver to Philadelphia, for me to fly about 7 hours for me to fly from Vancouver to Florida. This is 2025. We have the technology where everything should be flying close to Mach speed, if not past Mach speed, to hurry things up. And yet here we are still struggling at 500 knots in the sky. It's ridiculous. They have the technology. That's what they're hiding. It has nothing to do with UFOs. That's why they call it UAP, Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena, so they can hide everything under one banner.
Dave Scott does a national show in Canada called Deep. Why do I do this? SpacedOutRadio.com, Spaced Out Radio. You can find it on YouTube, Spaced Out Radio. And he's got a great website, SpacedOutRadio.com, which has spectacular merch. Any other deep thoughts for us, Dave?
Yes, there is a brand new UFO movie coming out. Marco Rubio is in it. Many of the UFO celebrities are in it. It's called Age of Disclosure. It was released today at a film festival in Texas. South by Southwest is what the film place is called, or the event is called. And, you know, they're talking about how they're bringing out all this new information, all this new people talking, that this is going to really push disclosure to the movement. So far, the reviews, it did nothing. No. Absolutely nothing.
And what's it
and
called?
It's, the same, it's called Age of Disclosure.
Got it. Age of Disclosure, a movie that about UFOs that's doing nothing. All right, Dave Scott, Sterling Every Damn Night. I'm Walter M. Sterling. Look at that. It's 17 past the hour already. We're having a good time. Why is this hurrying? You and I need to be together at this time of the week to get us from the horror of the weekend with your sister-in-law, your relatives, people who overeat and overdrink, and there you are, the hub of sanity among your relatives, the very hub of sanity. And finally, we get to go to work tomorrow or in just a few minutes on the late shift, the all-night shift, where we get to take it easy. I'm Walter Sterling every damn Sunday.
Gaffneys, meet the Gaffneys. They live in a 150-year-old house. They've got eight kids. We don't have time to name them all. Sometimes Dan and Becky like to bicker, and it's always good for a snicker. When you're with the Gaffneys, you know it's Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. It's Sterling every damn night.
Hi, it's Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
We're here to tell you tales of living with eight kids in our old house.
Now, with eight kids, we don't go out to eat often.
But when we do, we have a great time, and today was no exception. And I did raise my eyebrows a little bit when we ordered appetizers, and you ordered not one, but two entrees.
I'm calling you out on that because you did not raise your eyebrows when I ordered that. I always have the same order when we go to that restaurant. And I'm sorry.
Two entrees.
But it's delicious. And I like to kind of, you know, pick at one, pick at the other. And then most of the times that we're there, you finish part of one. Another kid finishes part of one. We've got big boys that eat it all.
Here's what happened today, though. You ordered the two entrees.
Yep.
You took, and I think literally, two bites.
I took literally two bites, yes.
And said, I am stuffed.
I was, and we had...
bites of one entree.
Right, but I had eaten, you know, some French fries, because we got those to share in the beginning, and I guess I just wasn't as hungry as I thought I was. And normally, the boys are hungrier.
Yeah.
And they eat it all up. But what we did today that was different was we had the smaller cluster of kids, like the younger kids, so there weren't boys to devour my food and make it look like I actually eat.
The waitress comes around. I thought there was something going on when we asked for the to-go boxes. I thought something was happening here. I didn't think you could finish.
But they never think we're going to finish, but I would like to say we usually do.
Right. And you're right. I appreciate actually that you order two because I end up eating a lot of it.
And anything that comes home, I do not ever see again. You guys grab it. You devour it. It's gone.
Right.
Today, I think you just noticed how little I ate.
Right. Well, often if you do bring it home and no one touches it, you never go back and eat it again.
Okay, no, we are absolutely not going to do that.
It just sits in there.
No, it's there for 35 seconds before some male in the house comes and devours it. And then I say, hey, where's my such and such that I was saving? And I never see it again.
With teenagers, any food in the fridge is like free game, no matter whose it is.
Right, so I guess what we're saying here is order all the food you want. Somebody's going to eat it eventually. Nothing will go to waste.
Follow me on Facebook, Dan Gaffney Show.
And if you're looking for me, you can find me on Instagram as Just Being Mom.
Thanks for listening to Sterling Every Damn Night.
For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank you. Welcome to Florida Stories. One of the amazing things you do not realize about Florida Stories is the amazing pile of stories that I do not have time to get to each and every weekend. One of the biggest contributors to the depletion of the Amazon rainforest is the amount of stories that I have to print out just to bring you these segments every weekend. For our first Florida story, we're going to West Palm Beach, where a 79-year-old grandmother was walking her bicycle across a drawbridge that connects to Palm Beach. She's about halfway across, and the bells start warning that the bridge is going to go up.
It was a horrific accident. An elderly woman plunges to her death when a drawbridge opens. 79-year-old Carol Wright was walking with her bike across the Royal Park Bridge. She was halfway across when the bridge opened and she could not get off in time.
So this drawbridge starts going up and Grandma is clinging to one of the guardrails, like in Titanic when the ship's going down and she's just hanging on for life. She hangs on as long as she can, but finally her little 79-year-old hands fail her and she plunges to her death. Any accidental death, any loss of life is a tragedy. But if I'm 79 years old and I've basically accomplished all the things in my life that I'm going to accomplish, I'm not saying I want to die from flying off of a drawbridge, but if I had to choose how I was going to die, that might make like the top 10. Because ask yourself, would you rather at 79 years old be dying with your family all around you after a four-year painful bout with cancer and all the chemo and everyone's just sitting around you crying and your grandson's holding your hand and you look awful, you feel awful, you don't have any hair, your face is all sunk in? No, I'd rather fall off the drawbridge. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we're going to go down the coast a little bit to Miami. Another god-awful, horrible tragedy and loss of human life. There's a beautiful little Miami Beach restaurant, I mean, right on the beach. And there was a rich old grandma trying to park. She's in her 80s, and I say she's rich because she's driving a Bentley. I don't know, maybe she stole it. And it's the classic case of mistaking the gas pedal for the brake and hammers the gas and plows right into a patio full of people who are eating. Six injured, one dead. And how awful is that? It's one thing when they accidentally accelerate into like a Burger King or hit the front of a grocery store, maybe. Stay tuned. Today's second installment of Florida Stories is right around the corner. Florida Stories is a Spring Rock production, springrockmedia@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter @JamesParkerShow. For Sterling on Sundays, I am James Parker, and this is Florida Stories. Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker. Welcome to part two of Florida Story. For our next Florida story, we're going to St. Augustine, Florida. They have a killer zoo there, and you know they have a good gator exhibit, because hey, it's Florida. 3 days ago, there's a van from the St. Augustine alligator farm that was taking some gators from the zoo to their farm. Now, while they're stopped at a stoplight, the guy behind them sees an alligator bust through the back window of the van and then squeezed his big, dumb alligator body out of the back window. So he pulls out his phone and starts filming it. The gator falls, and he starts running down Anastasia Boulevard in St. Augustine. Immediately, a couple of wranglers from the St. Augustine alligator farm jump out of the van, jump on the back of this gator, lasso it, tie it up, and chuck it back in the van. But does this happen where you live? And then the cameraman says, "See you later, gator." Next Florida story, we're going to Largo, where a 40-year-old Florida man has a 21-year-old girlfriend. When they got back from a long night of partying at a festival, they got into a big argument because the 21-year-old girlfriend couldn't find her phone. 40-year-old Florida man isn't much help in the search for the phone, so when she finds it, she's still upset and screaming at him, and he's sitting at his desk going over something on the computer, and she comes up behind him and starts smacking him. And he thinks this is some kind of kinky foreplay thing. He's like, "Boy, I don't know what these kids are into these days, but I'll just roll with the punches," you know, pun intended. He thought it was like a 50 Shades of Grey sort of sadomasochism thing. And it wasn't until she almost knocked him unconscious because she hit him with an object in the head that he's like, "Hang on a second. This isn't foreplay?" And so he goes and locks himself in the bathroom, calls the cops at 4:30 in the morning, and they come to get her. And the mugshot's hilarious because they had been at the festival the night before. She had some sort of face painting thing going on where it looks like her face is like a butterfly wing or something. But I can't laugh too much at this guy because, I mean, all guys are stupid like this. Women, you'd be surprised what guys would put up with if they think it's foreplay. Or disappointed is probably a better word. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we're going to go back down to Miami, where the Miss Alabama winner for 2021 decided she's going to go on a little weekend fun. And accidentally, I hope it's an accident. They're saying in the story it's an accident. Accidentally fell off a third floor balcony to her death. Matt, I am not intending for Florida Stories to be this dark this week, but I mean, this is what we get. It's been a dark week in Florida. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Stay tuned. Today's third installment of Florida Stories is on the way. Florida Stories is a Spring Rock production, springrockmedia@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter @JamesParkerShow. For Sterling on Sundays, I am James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Sterling every night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with the Owl and Dawn.
Mine's
My book author, Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my short story, The Deeper We Go. Tall brick apartment buildings overlooked the canal, looming shadows against the darkening sky. Emma turned into the parking lot and took a deep breath in an effort to keep her heart from pounding. This was the first time she'd been to Charlie's home, and the unspoken implications lingered at the back of her mind. Would she leave shortly after dinner, or stay until the next morning? Was this the night she'd been waiting for? The sight of him when he opened the door both reassured and excited her. "There you are," he said, beaming. "Come on in." She stepped inside the doorway and let him take her purse and jacket. "It smells amazing in here. Linguine with clams, one of my favorite dishes." He beckoned her toward the kitchen. "I'm almost done. You can have a seat, if you'd like, and help keep me entertained while I finish up." Before sitting in one of the chairs, she spotted a pair of wine glasses on the counter. She reached around him to pick one up. "How about I pour us some drinks instead?" He glanced back over his shoulder, a twinkle in his dark brown eyes. "I like the way you think." In the time it took her to locate a corkscrew and open a bottle of Chardonnay she found in the refrigerator, Charlie finished his preparations. He arranged the pasta onto two plates and joined her at the table. After she poured the wine, he sat across from her and clinked his glass against hers. "It's delicious," Emma said, taking care not to let any sauce drip off her plate. "No one's ever cooked like this for me before." "That's too bad." He twirled his fork around in the linguine. "You're definitely worth it." She blushed as she raised her glass to her lips. "I'm a decent enough cook, I guess, but I don't make myself a lot of shellfish. I'm always worried about screwing it up and wasting it all." Charlie watched her fumble with a stubborn clam. "Here, let me help." Reaching over the table, he opened the shell with ease. "I love seafood, but I'm not picky." He took a sip of wine and grinned. "Next time, you can choose the cuisine." She fought to keep the corners of her mouth from turning up in an identical smile. "Oh, you're already sure there's going to be a next time?" He laughed. "I'm planning on you not being able to resist the power of my culinary skills." They settled into comfortable conversation as they ate. Emma enjoyed each tidbit she learned about Charlie's life as much as every bite of the delectable meal he'd prepared. Although they hadn't been dating each other for long, he had a unique way of erasing her inhibitions. The speed with which she let her guard down around him startled her, yet she was content with being herself. Once they finished dinner, Charlie rinsed off the dishes and left them in the sink. "Those can wait for later," he said. "Do you want to go in the other room and watch a movie or something?" She gulped the last of her wine. Her heart rate quickened. "Sure." He led her to the couch and picked up the TV remote when he flopped down onto the cushions. "So, what are you in the mood for?" A dozen wicked ideas raced through her mind. She sat next to him, leaving only a sliver of space between their legs. "Doesn't matter to me," she said, trying to keep her voice even. "Nothing too long or overly dramatic." He scrolled through a list of titles on one of his streaming services.
This one came out last year, and it's supposed to be pretty funny. Emma leaned back and waited for him to start the movie. He placed the remote on an end table and rested his arm behind her on the edge of the couch. Taking her cue, she shifted closer, curling up against his side. The opening credits rolled, and she tried to get comfortable and settle in one spot for the next 90 minutes. Except the close proximity of his body to hers made it difficult to concentrate on anything else. Her mind kept drifting to the weight of his arm around her shoulders, the heat of his skin beneath the thin fabric of his shirt. The internal debate over whether to tear his attention away from the screen or wait for him to make the first move threatened to drive her insane. I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon, and you're listening to an excerpt from my short story, The Deeper We Go, which is available at Amazon. You can also hear uncensored excerpts at patreon.com/Thea Landon. If you have anything you'd like to share with me, you can always email me at smuttythea@gmail.com. Let's keep going. Charlie angled his head back to look at where she'd nestled alongside his chest. You're not laughing. Sorry, she said, though the apology was half-hearted. He paused the movie. Do you want me to put on something else? Emma chose to seize her opportunity. No, I don't. She brushed her fingertips along his cheek, tracing a line over his jaw before cupping the back of his neck. Surprise lit up his eyes, yet he accepted her invitation. Soft lips met hers, warm and irresistible. Her tongue slipped inside his mouth, and she tasted the heady remnants of the wine they'd shared. They had exchanged flirtatious kisses during previous dates, just enough to keep her wanting more. But this time was different. Hunger drove her forward. She ran her fingers through his hair, holding him in place as their tongues tangled together. His hand drifted down to her waist, where it grazed the thin strip of exposed skin between her shirt and her jeans. The contact sent electricity dancing across her nerves and whisked the air from her lungs. She wanted him to touch more of her and to explore every inch of him in return. As if reading her mind, Charlie stroked her thigh, heat emanating from his palm. She slid her legs over his knees to encourage him. He offered the desired response, his hand traveling farther to give her hips a firm squeeze. Emma let out a giggle against his mouth. Without breaking their kiss, she maneuvered onto his lap, straddling him to grant him better access. He delivered a playful nibble to her lower lip, and she laughed again. Being with him felt natural, yet exhilarating. For once, she believed she was the confident, sexy woman she'd always wanted to be. His grip on her tightened. She leaned forward, pressing against his chest. As he fondled her curves, he stirred beneath her. The rock-hard bulge pushing between her legs incited a new wave of wild lust, and her hips rolled forward. Charlie groaned as she ground against him. His hands skimmed up her sides, and she anticipated them roaming over the rest of her body. Instead, he pulled away from her. "Emma, wait," he said, panting for air. Their pace hadn't bothered her. "I don't want to wait." Before he could answer, she assaulted his mouth again.
He kissed her with the same vigor, but only for a moment longer. We have to stop. With one swift, gentle motion, he extricated himself from her grasp and moved her off his lap. Emma knelt on the couch next to him, her brow furrowing. What's the matter? Did I do something wrong? No. Oh, no, of course not. His chest heaving, he fell back against the cushions and rubbed his eyes. Look, I wasn't sure what you were expecting tonight, whether you wanted a quiet evening cuddling on the couch or this. But before we do anything else, I need to talk to you about something. Remains of the pleasurable haze clouded her mind, and she fought to push them aside. Okay, she mumbled. Charlie straightened and faced her. I like you a lot, Emma.